What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hi, this is Rosie.
And Carmen.
From Barnes UK, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcasts.
History in 5 songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Well, hello again. Welcome back to another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good folks at Pantheon Podcasts. Pleased, as always, to be part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, available on Spotify, iTunes, Podbay, and over 40 other podcast platforms. Okay, so this episode, this is another one that I feel is a bit of a necessity episode, and it's also kind of cool in that the whole idea here is that we are putting together a history of heavy metal across, okay, we've got, this is episode 38, but across these episodes so far, there are 4 or 5 episodes that one could string together to create a history of heavy metal only up to a point at this point. And this is one of those connective ones that I've always felt was a true, vital topic to talk about and something that sets up what is to come after. And I feel like I'm one of the only ones who has been talking about this as a definable concept. So, episode 38, we are calling Second Wave Heavy Metal European Division. Now, I've always had this idea that after the first wave, well, after the 60s, which is sort of your disparate little pieces getting put together in the history of heavy metal, we have the big explosion in 1970 with the likes of Black Sabbath, Uriah Heep, and Deep Purple. But then essentially not a lot happens up until about 1975. Not a lot new. We do get a lot of great albums coming out during that time. But there really is nothing that feels like a next wave movement. And I really wanted to set up this thing because, you know, we already have episodes on the new wave of British heavy metal. We have episodes on early hair metal. I will do an episode on the invention of thrash, maybe just called Who Invented Thrash to go with our Who Invented Heavy Metal. You know, we've also got the Who Invented Punk and Grunge, but that's a little off to the side. But I feel that there is this period that needs to be defined and talked about between about, you know, roughly speaking, 1975 to 1979. And this is what I call the second wave. And what I like about this is the thing that essentially sets up the new wave of British heavy metal. Now, why I say that specifically instead of this big thing that we got out of America, hair metal, is because I will do an episode, a sister or brother episode of this one, called Second Wave Heavy Metal American Division. And I think you can guess who's going to be talked about in those ones. But this is going to be all European. And, you know, my initial instinct was to make this an English, a UK division thing, because most of what we're going to talk about here is UK-based. But I had to get in Scorpions. And then once I started looking at these bands, I realized that there are people from all over the place, all over Europe, but essentially, well, some Americans as well, but it is essentially a UK thing. But I liked the idea of European, and we'll talk about a deeper reason for that in a moment. So, let's move into our first entry, and we will get this off. I've arranged these essentially chronologically by their period of importance when they really fit into this narrative. Again, I wanted to talk about these bands, not in the same way I've talked about them all a million times. I mean, all five of these bands you're going to hear, I've written books on, and three out of the five, I've written multiple books on these bands. So I've talked about these bands a lot in, book interviews or other shows that we've got, The Contrarians, the stuff I do with Banger. So there's been a lot of discussion, but I wanted to keep this fairly focused on this concept, the second wave concept. So, okay, without further ado, let's play our first one. This is UFO with Mother Mary. Take a listen. All right, so why do we have UFO in here? All of these bands, like I say, I'm calling them second wave bands, but UFO is the first one that brings up this interesting case. They started way back in 1970 along with these other bands. I mean, essentially, Sabbath and Heap started 69-ish. Deep Purple is the one band that goes back further. We keep forgetting they had three studio albums in the psychedelic rock era and the classical album, and then they went through major lineup changes. So by 1970, they had a few war scars on them. So Deep Purple is really the oldest of these bands. But I make the mistake of forgetting that it doesn't all start within rock sometimes as well, because to me that's a super super important album. But UFO is one of these bands that also starts around the same time, but I consider them fully a second wave band, because that first wave, nobody was woke to UFO at all, and for good reason. The Mick Bolton era, they were kind of like a punky, garagey, caveman-y, rudimentary version of Free. They were almost like a post-British blues boom band, even though they had this long concept in Flying, but they basically had UFO 1, Flying, the live album, and they came and went without a whisper. On Beacon, essentially more German distribution probably than UK distribution. These records certainly, we didn't see them in Canada or the US particularly. Really underground band at that point. But what happens is Michael Schenker joins the band. So again, we have this English band. Three of the guys are English, but a super, super important member in the band is German, in Michael Schenker. And they kick things off with the Phenomenon album, but again, they're not really outside of Rock Bottom and Doctor, the rest of the album is pretty much ignored. Force It comes out in July 1975. This song you just heard is from Force It, Mother Mary. This is their first, quite a bit heavier album than Phenomenon, and they are off to the races. And again, just to give you sort of the ongoing history, we get No Heavy Pet, and probably my favorite of the Michael Schenker era. Lights Out, a lot of people love Lights Out. It's their most famous album. Then Obsession in 1978. So they have this good bank of well-loved albums. And again, this idea of the second wave, this is essentially, nobody remembers that UFO is as old as these other bands, because basically they come to light, they blossom like a butterfly, on Chrysalis, of course. Basically in the late 70s, and they become this fairly famous band, a good working band, solid financial footing, but nobody's getting rich off of this, of course. But well known in the UK, Europe, they're starting to tour the States. But again, they're this kind of band that sets up the new wave of British heavy metal. How do they specifically do it? They do it through this concept of keyboards in heavy metal, and also an overt sense of melody, great storytelling, and Michael Schenker. They have a guitar hero who's a very quintessentially European playing guitar hero. Now it's only a single guitar band. We're gonna get to that in a second, but essentially they are one of these bands that is a second wave band that proves to these new wave of British heavy metal people that, hey, there might be a future in this, despite punk coming along, despite prog, despite, you know, some disparaging comments to heavy metal. There are new heavy metal bands injecting something into the situation. Okay. So let's move on with our second selection, and we shall discuss. This is Rainbow with Run With The Wolf.
Fall of the snow, a single soul will go. With footsteps on the white, there's an unholy light. There's a hole in the sky. Something evil's passing by. What to come when the siren calls you go? To run with the wolf.
All right, so Rainbow is so much a second generation band. They basically started in 1975 with the Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow album, and they are proving to be so graphically second generation, second wave, as our title calls it, because they are the butterfly rising, you know, out of Deep Purple, out of the death of Deep Purple. Deep Purple isn't dead yet. You know, they're essentially on their way out. But Rainbow kind of replaces them, and they replace them with, I've said this before, but I love this story. I mean, the idea that this is the first album we ever got as kids that had no mellow songs on at all. This is a 6 out of 6 album in terms of, like, the whole thing is heavy metal. So that's kind of an important thing for the new wave of British heavy metal. If you want to talk about, what does Rainbow bring to that? What they bring is the idea of unapologetically being heavy metal, loving heavy metal, talking about heavy metal. Well, they don't talk about heavy metal, but this idea of it's okay to make this music and have no ballads on it, no proggy stuff. Well, I mean, the 2 8-minute songs are somewhat proggy in a way, but it's essentially championing heavy metal really forthrightly and honestly. Ritchie making a statement that I don't want to be a bluesy funky band, and this is the new thing, or at least it's what he's going to do. So again, and one more thing. That Rainbow represents moving on into the new wave of British heavy metal is you could write these Dungeons and Dragons and demony and occult and Middle Ages type Renaissance type things, and when you get into the new wave of British heavy metal, you know, a whole environs gets put together, a whole world gets put together of timelessness. And you get timeless lyrics out of the likes of Judas Priest. You get timeless lyrics out of Iron Maiden. Judas Priest isn't obviously new wave of British heavy metal, and we are going to talk about them here as well in this episode. But essentially, you get a heavy metal world invented on the Rainbow Rising album, and to a large extent on the Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow album, and even Long Live Rock and Roll. So again, just to flesh it out, why is Rainbow an emphatically second wave connective tissue between the first wave and the new wave of British heavy metal? Well, they had one studio album, they have Rising as a second, they have a double live album, real snoozer that one, and then they also have this great, third album with Ronnie James Dio, Long Live Rock and Roll. And then they have what is my favorite Rainbow album, Down to Earth, even before the decade is out, 1979. So they're a big part of this whole thing. And again, they're a British band proving that you can be successful in this. You know, I say they're a British band, but again, and this is the European division, but, the fact of the matter is, two-fifths of the band are American. Tony Carey is from California. Ronnie James Dio is from upstate New York. You've got Ritchie Blackmore, British. You've got Jimmy Bain, British, but Scottish. Who's left? Cozy is British. And they're making really, really British music. That's an important part here. Or even to be more specific but wider, they're making very European music. They're making very classical based music, and that's very important for the idea of the new wave of British heavy metal. And on that beautiful, beautiful phrase, let's take a break. All right, back again. This is History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, episode 38, second wave heavy metal, European division. Our third entry in this is Thin Lizzy with Emerald. Take a listen.
We'll throw the overlords to the towns where there was plenty. They brought plunder, swords, and flame. When they left, the town was empty, and children would never play again.
All right, so here's another one of these bands that is as old as the hills. They're as old as everybody else. They go back to 1970, 1971. Thin Lizzy, Shades of Blue Orphanage. They've got Vagabonds of the Western World and Nightlife and Fighting. But they don't really become, I mean, their rise is a lot more gradual. They are, you know, people woke to good music are more into early Thin Lizzy than they are into early UFO, that's for sure. Because Vagabonds, you start getting the sound. Nightlife, little bit. Fighting, you certainly get the birth of the Thin Lizzy sound. But I wanted to pick this one to show Thin Lizzy really becoming, again, this butterfly coming out of, you know, essentially they're a new band to a lot of people. Jailbreak is a pretty considerably big hit album. It does go gold. It's got Boys Are Back in Town on it, the band's most famous song. Jailbreak on it, possibly the band's second most famous song. But Emerald's a great, heavy, famous song. So here they are, and again, European division. You know, you can't really call Thin Lizzy a UK band because Phil Lynott is Irish. Brian Downey is Irish. You've got Brian Robertson, who's British but Scottish, and you've got Scott Gorham, who is an American. So it's a little bit of a rainbow thing happening here, frankly, I suppose. You know, a lot of people do think of them as a UK band because they are essentially, even much earlier than this, a London-based band in a lot of ways. You know, they're all the ads are in all the Melody Maker and Sounds and all that. They're always about town in the pubs. You know, basically, people think of Thin Lizzy as a UK band in a lot of ways. And it's funny, you know, as a London band, but yet not a single one of them is actually from London. The other thing that's important about Thin Lizzy, very similar to UFO, I always considered them sister bands, but you know, there is this Bruce Springsteen-ish storytelling aspect. And when I say that, I'm not even saying Bruce Springsteen was first, because you know, Bruce loved these bands as well. I mean, they're almost doing all this kind of all together. Phil Lynott essentially is a predecessor to Bruce Springsteen. He's almost, you know, you could almost say Bruce Springsteen is following in the Phil Lynott tradition in some ways. You do get that, but I think one of the big things you get moving into the new wave of British heavy metal that Thin Lizzy brings is this idea of twin leads and having two guitarists. You know, two guitarists who are kind of the centerpieces of the band, and when they play together, even more so. So you get twin leads, which is an important part, of course, of Iron Maiden, but a lot of bands and a lot of new wave of British heavy metal bands had two guitarists. And again, Thin Lizzy's making amazing, great anthems. They're killer live. They are, you know, inflaming the imaginations of new wave of British heavy metal guys that are maybe a few years younger that are saying, hey, you know, there might be a future in this. It looks like a lot of people love Thin Lizzy. You know, we could do this. And once we get into the 80s, a lot of bands definitely cite Thin Lizzy as one of their beloved influences. Okay, so moving on, we're up to number four in our episode 38, Second Wave Heavy Metal European Division. This is Scorpions with Steam Rock Fever. All right, so to recap chronologically, we had UFO July 75 for that one. We had Rainbow was May 17th, 76. Thin Lizzy was March 26th, 76. So it's a couple months earlier. I kind of, but I, you know, I did want to talk about sort of you know, the idea also that Rainbow's importance goes back to the first album, and Thin Lizzy is really, you know, awakening or in the consciousness of people at this point. Scorpions, we are up to December 4th, 1977. This is off the Taken by Force album. And here's, you know, the main reason I had to call this European division. This is a completely German band, and a real sort of you know, European sound. But you know, when I say European sound with these bands, what I also like is the idea that as that this European sound is as much British as it is mainland European. You know, of course, Scorpions has the brother of Michael Schenker in Rudolf Schenker in the band, and Scorpions also spends a lot of time in the UK. Not to the point where people think of them as a UK band, but you know, everybody coming up in the new wave of British heavy metal knew the Scorpions and loved what they were doing. You know, and again, this is another band that goes back even earlier than some of our first wave bands. You know, their murky roots go back to even the mid '60s. But when they make their first record, Lonesome Crow, they're truly a krautrock band at that point. Fly to the Rainbow is mostly a krautrock band album. Virgin Killer, mostly. Virgin Killer is where they really start, you know, coming into being in terms of being like mostly very heavy metal. I mean, the song Virgin Killer is just amazing on that album. But again, moving up into 77, I mean, this is where you get Sales of Charon. You get basically their most famous song. They have a double live album in 78. 79. They start getting a little bit of an Americanized sound with Matthias Jabs being in the band, not an American, but I mean, basically now him and Rudy are even closer than Ole John Roth and Rudy were, because Ole is kind of an obscure Hendrix kind of guy, a little bit bluesy. He sung a lot of the songs, so he has a very kind of throaty, scratchy sort of voice. So they're becoming a less obscure band, but most definitely... It seems that Scorpions, you know, the woke period is basically 76 on, so they are a second wave band, I would say. Okay, so moving on to our last one, I think you all know who this would be. Take a listen to this. This is Judas Priest with Running Wild. Now, why I wanted to pick Judas Priest was, you know, Judas Priest is a band that is, again, they have roots going back to 1969. But, I mean, unlike Thin Lizzy and UFO and Scorpions, I mean, their first record is 1974. And then very quickly, they are absolutely re-engineering heavy metal for a new wave, a second wave, with Sad Wings of Destiny in 1976. But... I put them here last. This record, Killing Machine, comes out October 9th, 1978. I put them last because they grow by leaps and bounds, certainly from Rock and Roller through Sad Wings, but you know, moving into Sin After Sin and Stained Class, and up to this point at Killing Machine / Hellbent for Leather. Of course, this comes out just into the new year, 1979, in America as Hellbent for Leather, adding the Fleetwood Mac cover, Green Man Alishi. But I wanted to put them here because they are really, really, truly setting up the new wave of British heavy metal with an album that is the most technical, the fastest, the most action-packed, the most skilled of everything you've been hearing so far, the most new wave of British heavy metal adjacent to everything that you've heard here so far. You know, with quick anthems like Hellbent for Leather, you know, Take on the World, you know, a lot closer to that identification with heavy metal that is so important, importantly a part of the new wave of British heavy metal. You just feel like this is moving on. I mean, everybody else, you know, Thin Lizzy, UFO kind of just has a foot in this whole thing. Rainbow has almost like too much personality to be considered truly committed to this heavy metal cause, and Ritchie Blackmore so argumentative. If you called him heavy metal, he would probably bristle at that and argue with you about it. But Judas Priest, on the other hand, they're moving into this leather and studs phase, these quick-paced, awesome songs. And again, another thing they bring to the idea of the new wave of British heavy metal is two guitar heroes in Glenn Tipton and KK Downing. Twin leads, they are truly in there inventing the twin lead idea along with Thin Lizzy, and of course before that Wishbone Ash and Allman Brothers. Twin leads and also, you know, twin guitars almost in battle with each other. They do a lot of noisy battles with each other. Just great solos, memorable solos, amazing riffs, probably the best riff writers out of these five. Because, you know, with the likes of UFO and Thin Lizzy, you get this songwriting thing where songs are often based more around the melodies or the chord patterns rather than the whittly riffs that might be, you know, two-string riffs or one-string riffs, you know, fast, quick-paced stuff. But you get a lot more complication with Judas Priest, and I think that's a big thing that leads into the new wave of British heavy metal. So there you go. We can wrap it up there. Essentially, like I say, I really felt that this was an episode that had to happen because you could almost rearrange these episodes and turn them into a kind of much longer history of heavy metal. And this is one that was just glaringly, you know, stuck between things I've done already. We've done hair metal, we've done new wave of British heavy metal, we're gonna do thrash. And the other one that is still a hole here is what happens in America, essentially, between 75 and 79, and we will address that. I don't know if that'll be the next episode, but it'll be sometime soon. I mean, you know, I get these inspirations where, you know, I sit down and go, I want to do this episode next, so it might get pushed, but it has to happen for the organizational feel of this. And then, like I say, you know, one could rearrange these episodes, which is kind of a neat idea. We will leave there. Go to the Facebook page. I would love to have more people joining up there. We've got over 400 members or something at the Facebook page. I love, talking back and forth with you, you folks about ideas. It's really cool. We're getting a lot of ideas there. You can email me at martinp@inforamp.net. You can go to my site, martinpopoff.com. Like I say, I've got books on all of these bands and actually, let me see here. Yeah, they're all in print. All these books are still in print. So martinpopoff.com, there's PayPal buttons for everything. I sign them, send them out of the office. That is it for now. Until next time, go listen to some second wave heavy metal European division. So until next time, we shall talk to you later.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at the RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.